Hello, and welcome to Real Professional, the podcast where professionals have really professional conversations about the gaming industry. I'm DreadXP Rock on Tour Jans Holstrom, joined by Ted Hinchke. Say hi, Ted.
Hello!
Abby is not here today. She is playing a show because she's a rock star and now too important for us, and it's very sad.
Yeah, she said, fuck you guys, I'm never coming back. I'm way too famous and popular for you now, which isn't hard. We have like 3 listeners.
But she has missed probably my favorite episode that I've scheduled so far. I don't know how it's going to pan out after we start talking, but our guest today is the wonderful writer Robert Brockway. Say hi, Robert.
Hi. Hey, that's me. I'm that one. How you doing?
So we're a little bit short-staffed, but we've got a really good guest, and we expect him to carry us throughout the episode. So DJ, drop that sick beat. I'm going to make that our new theme song, just wah, 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 wah.
Are there any other Robert Brockways? Like, I just thought of this. Like, what if we booked the
wrong? Oh, man. Today, that has come up again. Yes, there is another Robert Brockway, and he is evil. He is the antithesis of me.
Wait, what is he?
Our Discord has just found out about it. He's a very, very prominent men's rights activist, and he writes and does a lot of terrible content about women online, and he goes by Robert Brockway, same the full name. He's an Australian, and every once in a while he contributed to this terrible tome of hate speech, and every once in a while Amazon and Goodreads will be like, you know what, that's your book, and they'll put it on my author profile, and I'll have to go through their archival labyrinth to try to figure out once again how to remove this hate speech manifesto from my biography. So yeah, there is another Robert Brockway. Don't look him up. I'm not that one. I promise.
We were actually trying to get the men's right activist. Is that not you? Are you not him?
No. No, I'm the antithesis of that guy. That is like the negative universe Robert Brockway that if we ever touch it, will explode the entire cosmos.
Now I can just imagine the Sean Baby list of like 5 men's rights activists shit that will make you regret having balls. Like, that's totally a list he'd do. Like, I read 5 lists. Like 5 books, like terrible books. It's like, it's, I just always used to love those like weird lists that he would do of like fake martial arts and shit like that, you know?
Oh yeah. We got one of those. I just finished scheduling one for tomorrow. Look for the fakest martial arts on our site.
Ooh, I love those.
Which is 1900hotdog.com. I got to do my plugs.
No, I mean, I love 1900hotdog. I actually, I'm an elderly person because I read Sean Baby content. And as you know, your demographic is people who are 3 weeks from the grave, probably, like myself, you know? Well, it's like, and I'm saying that like hyperbolically, but I also feel like, it's kind of like what was the way that I would call it? Kind of the old days of the internet back when it was a lot more Wild Westy, you know?
Yeah. Wild West internet, outlaw internet for sure.
I miss those days. I feel like we've gotten. Have you ever seen a little indie film from a man named Marty Scorsese called Casino? It's a small one. Probably haven't heard of it before.
Yeah, well, that was Vegas back in the day. '90s internet was Vegas in like the '60s. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And then the end with the montage is like all of the old people walking into the casinos and like. You know, that's kind of like Facebook and Twitter now. It's like just a bunch of people like yelling at each other online. It's like the elderly people.
That is for sure one of our demographics. We actually kind of split into two. We have the olds, the like 35 and over crowd that remember, you know, all of us as being adults. But cracked, like our second sort of renaissance came from cracked, where like a lot of kids would read that, even though you're not supposed to. A lot of kids, you know, would read that and are now coming to us in like their early to mid 20s and joining up and being like, oh, loved you when I was a kid. And that's a whole different way to feel old. You can feel old both ways now.
This actually raises a really interesting question, I find, because you hit on something really real there, which is that, you know, I found this as a kid, even though I wasn't supposed to, right? Like,
We
live in a very kind of like back in the day, right, when we were on the internet, the only real security was, are you 18? And then you click yes, you know? Like, there wasn't...
It came later. It used to be just nothing.
It used to be just nothing. Like, yeah.
Welcome to the desert, kid. Hope you find your way.
But now you have, like, basically infinite tracking. You know, people are kind of self-exposed. Like, you know, if you wanted to be a doofus on the internet, you'd go on, like, something awful, make a fake name, and then, like, be a doofus, right? Like, but now it's, like, everything is tracked, and everything is very, like, recorded and kind of a lot more sanitized. And it's like, it's one of those things. It's interesting too, because we're all acting like, oh, well, we got to do things for the sake of the kids. We got to make sure, like, we're all kind of self-regulating and self-censoring now in a way, like in the social media landscape and in the media landscape in general, where it's like, oh, you can't do anything too extreme because you don't want to be advertiser unfriendly and think of the kids. And I'm like, I'm thinking of when I was a kid, I was doing the things that I now won't do because I'm scared of the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think you hit it yourself. It's not really the kids, it's the corporations. We're
right.
The kids, we're not doing this because we're worried about the kids. The kids will be fine. It's definitely the corporations that are kind of put their hands in everything and are now like, got to have that Disney sensibility. Everything's got to be for the widest market possible.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, that's the thing, right? It's like, we're not actually, like, most corporations aren't making content to, like, appeal to, like, anyone really. Like, it's content to appeal to the idea of what we should be appealing to. And I find that, like, you know, if you look at the trends of, like, media that's being created, like, there's certain kind of, like, rises and falls. Like, it's always kind of the pendulum, and we're kind of coming out, and I've said this a lot before, because I'm a conspiracy theorist and a giant a weirdo, but no, I mean, it's like I've said this before, is that, like, we're coming off the end of the wholesome train. And the wholesome train, I believe, was a reaction to the past 6 years of, like, abject insanity that we've kind of lived in. And now that we're, and people are kind of like, the wholesome trend can't last, because at the end of the day, people want to be able to, like, laugh at stupid shit. They want to be able to, like, watch people's heads explode. Like, there's a reason that Scanners is still, like, the go-to clip for head explosions, right? It's because it fucking kicks ass. And like, so I think we're kind of, like, returning to that style of sensibility. I don't know. I mean, I hope so. I feel like the last few years of everyone just yelling on Twitter has not been very, very good for the collective humor sphere, as I'd say.
Well, some of us never left. Some of us went, no, you're wrong. We'll go start our own thing, and hopefully anybody will show up. And then some people have. It's been good.
Well, yeah, thank actually, God. That's kind of one of the things I wanted to ask about. Like, I'm really, this is a conversation that's really interesting for me, because it's like, you in the one, like, kind of the, that 1-900 Hot Talks stuff. I mean, especially after Cracked, right? Because Cracked kind of got, like, bought out, and then just it sucks now. Sorry, I don't know if there's any Cracked fans out there. I don't know if you're still a Cracked fan, Robert. Sorry.
Nobody is. I believe I have them blocked after their last thing, after the newest company, Literally Media, pulled. The same sort of thing. Then they just fired everybody I liked. They fired me. They did on, like, our severance packages. They pulled a lot of just really scammy stuff. So no, I'm not. I it doesn't make me less proud of, like, what we did at Cracked. And some of the folks that still work at Cracked are from the, you know, the old school. And ain't nobody gonna blame you for keeping a job in the pandemic, especially in media, which as near as I can tell does not exist anymore.
Yeah, right.
I'm glad I got out of Cracked whenever it was still good.
Yeah, pre-2017, you were great.
Yeah, I actually, so Cracked did this weird thing for quite a few people. And that's, it was, whenever I wrote for Cracked, it was, you know, 2008, 2009. It was just like, write for us, just send us a pitch, we will check it out.
Yeah, that's where I came from, too.
Yeah, and like, that's how I started my writing, because I'm also an editorial and review writer for Dread XP whenever I'm not hosting the podcast and running social media. But, yeah, I started out writing listicles for Cracked, and the process was, like, it was really nice at the time. You pitch it, refine it, you know, work on it. They send you money. It was pretty sick for an 18-year-old who was just getting into writing.
Yeah, it was great. That was our old workshop system, which, again, does not exist anymore.
So yeah.
Don't be tempted hearing about it being like, that's great, I'm going to do that. It was one of the many things that just can't exist in the world of, like, corporate turnover anymore. But we killed ourselves running that workshop, where we would reply to every single pitch, no matter how off base it was. And
I was gonna say, I think replies from Robert Brockway on one of my pitches.
Oh, for sure. I What was, I'm probably not going to remember your username, but.
You might remember the article because it was pretty big at the time. It was like 8 unsolved mysteries with really obvious solutions.
Hey, that's yeah, like, I remember that.
Yeah, that's with like the, my big one.
Was that the one with the stones or was that a sequel?
That was a sequel with the stones. Mine was like the Bermuda Triangle, Dyatlov Pass.
Yeah, that started a franchise. That's the Fast and the Furious.
Right yeah, there. I still, you know, this was 12 years ago, and I still occasionally, if I pop on Cracked, it's been a couple years now, but I would have messages from people like, can I write a sequel article? And I'm like, I finally had to change the bio on my Cracked account because I check it like every 5 years. I was like, if you want to write a sequel, just do it. You don't need my permission. Just go. Blanket permission.
If you really want to write Fast and Furious 10, that's fine. Just do that.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is that now Jans is the one cranking out the Asylum knockoffs of Fast and Furious with his Dread the Unsolved series.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm out here doing unsolved mysteries for Dread Central every week.
That's literally how you got the job, was because of that article. So
it was, yeah. That article was like my my test piece that I was like, oh, yeah, I know a thing or two about mysteries. I was in the Cracked D-Text book. They printed my article, and they're like, all right, here's some money to do narration and shit.
Man, I love hearing, like, we got so many people jobs just from, like, had somehow wrestled up a reputation as something you should respect in media circles back when that existed. And people would really like, oh, you wrote this article and it got, let me check here, 2 billion views. There you go. You got a job.
And it's so weird.
12 trillion views.
There's always like the, I think whenever I first started writing for Dread XP, the managing editor, Sam, great guy. But he was like, do you have any writing like examples? So I sent him my Cracked stuff. And he was like, was this before or after Cracked was bad? And I was like, oh, it was whenever they were still good. So it's like quality content.
Like, yeah, you sure. Got to specify. In my bio shit. For a long time, I had like long time Cracked editor from the good years. You have to be specific.
It's kind of like The Onion before Condé Nast.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, before scripts, before literally.
How do they make money now, though, if everyone hates them? Like, what is their business model?
I don't think they do. I know that their business model is to not pay anybody. Like, basically anything.
That would save a lot of money, yeah.
Which does save a lot of money, but I don't know who's paying for it. Like, I don't know. Advertising does not work anymore. The internet, as a place that makes money, especially for creatives, largely does not work. Like, you have to figure it out on your own as a person or a small collective of people. And that's it. It's just not a place where corporations can make good things and still make money.
I mean, that's why the business model that we use at Jet XP is that I pay the writers through the profits of the game as a marketing extension.
That's great.
Because, like, yeah, I mean, it's like I created this community site, this website, so that people could have a place to go that wouldn't be. Okay, so like our editorial bend at Dread XP is positively spooky. So like everything that we write is positive, not like out of a desire to be twee or anything, but just because I feel that like the horror community in general can be rather like kind of gatekeepy at times. But also like I feel like the a lot of the praise is like, so it's really easy to shit on an indie creator's work, right? Like I don't care if my staff shits on The Last of Us 2. I don't care if my staff shits on like Resident Evil 8. What I do care about is if my staff shits on like Indie Experiment 7 from a guy in high school, you know, yeah. Like that's, and so it's really hard to tell with indie, especially like itch.io indie, like who's going to be like just some kid making something for fun versus, you know, someone that's like an actual professional. So basically our editorial bend is positive because we view ourselves as more of like an instructional site, like a place to actually discuss mechanics and actually discuss how to make games better. But it's still like wants to be a place where I want people to have fun, be free to write whatever the fuck they want to write about, which you can't really do if you're going for like maximization of clicks. Like I would just have to be like 7 Silent Hill articles a day. And then like, you know, that would be the way that you maximize clicks. And, but because the articles are paid through the production of the games and not through ad sales on the site, we're actually able to like maintain an independent editorial voice through that. But that's the only way we can do it. Like otherwise we would not be making money. You know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like this old system of traffic is king, advertisers, it's all gone. The people chasing that are things like what Cracked has currently become or The Onion or whoever. is left that has been bought and sold many, many times, and nobody quite knows what to do with it. So, yeah, it's time to invent new revenue models, go back to old ones like the patron system. I don't know, just getting it however you get it.
That's kind of the dirty little secret of the internet too right now, is that there's a lot of these huge companies that are theoretically super valuable that somehow can't figure out how to make money. Like YouTube spends like so much, that's why we keep seeing these ups in like their ads, the amount of ads that we're going to see and how often the ads are, and like all this, they're constantly changing their ad model because they're like squeezing pennies from a stone. And like same with someplace like Twitter. Like Twitter, like their algorithm pushes engagement through like negative engagement, because like they're just trying to get maximize engagement because they're trying to squeeze as many pennies out of like basically, you know, stones as they can. And you know, it's like we really highly value in our social zeitgeist these big tech companies that essentially like their actual underlying product is so ephemeral that like if Twitter were to disappear tomorrow, like completely disappear tomorrow, another Twitter would come and replace it in a week. Like it would be functionally no difference. But if
something might come along anyway.
Right, exactly.
Always living on the knife edge.
Well, that's the thing about Twitter, is that it actually is no longer growing at the rate that it needs to maintain its growth projections, which if you know anything about tech companies, if you're not growing, you're fucking dead, because we live in a capitalist hellscape that can't just let things be. But, you know, that's part of the system that created and brought up to Twitter. So that is, you know, if you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. If you live by the infinite growth tech model, you will die by the infinite growth tech model. And, you know, you see platforms like TikTok, like I don't think people know, but like Twitter is no longer, it's not even like the top 10 social media platforms anymore. It's number 17. Like,
wow.
Yeah. And that's like below TikTok. Like TikTok is number 8 now. So,
I don't even know that many. So like list the others.
Well, yeah, there's Facebook is number 1 still. I listed YouTube as one of the top. I know that a lot of people wouldn't consider YouTube a social media site, but it really is.
Twitch, of course.
Yeah, and Reddit is up there.
You know, TikTok's up there. And then there's a lot of the foreign kind of markets. That's another thing that a lot of people don't realize too. Twitter is really only big in the United States and Japan. There's a ton of people in Europe, you know, the Middle East, China, you know, Russia that just don't have Twitters. Like it's something like 70 or 80% of all accounts come from the USA and Japan.
What is European Twitter called?
Fooples. I want to come up with a good joke here, but I'm not terribly clever.
Gist Twitter in Germany.
Das Tweetens.
I just realized something. We didn't do the gamer safety update.
Oh, Ted, fuck me. Shit, we have a format. I totally forgot the format. You're supposed
You're supposed to keep me on track. That's
sorry. That's Abby's the one that keeps us on track. She's not here. We're just a fucking mess.
Thanks, Abby. So, Robert, normally at the beginning of the episode, at the top of the episode, we do the gamer safety update because, you know, we work at a game company and we care about people's safety. So,
of course.
This week, I have an excellent gamer safety update. What kind of headsets are y'all wearing right now?
Doing headphones and Yeti mic.
I got a string with some cups.
Okay. Like some Dixie cups?
Yeah, yeah.
That you usually use to talk with the girl across the way?
Yeah, it's usually how I talk with my sweetheart across the street, yeah. But my microphone's a tin can, so it's picking up things rather nicely.
She's in her tree house, you know. Okay. I'm wearing a Razer Kraken, or I have one around here. I'm actually not wearing the Kraken right now. I'm wearing, I can't remember the name of it. It's a wireless headset that I use for podcasting. So, just a few weeks ago, 10 days ago actually, a man was sitting in his house playing some Apex Legends, as one does, when a bullet came through his window, a stray bullet. This is in California, a land of lawlessness where murder is legal, and the bullet hit his headset and ricocheted away from his cranium, saving his life.
Oh, there you go. Gaming safety equipment.
What model of headset was this?
It was a Razer Kraken. I've put a picture in our podcast chat. It literally hit the metal and ricocheted off in the headband.
So he's just always going to wear that from now on.
I wonder if it's like a bulletproof vest where he's going to have to buy a new one because he's gotten the one use out of that one.
Well, you could flip it around, I think, on that one.
Just hope the bullets come in the same direction.
Try to make sure somebody shoots you from the other direction, if you can.
Like, a bullet bounces off your head while you're playing Apex, you would be, like, very startled.
It kind of ties into the, I think, one of the first gamer safety updates where the guy kept on getting shit-talked in Call of Duty until he went to the dude's house and choked him. Like, maybe this guy was getting owned so frequently that someone drove to his house and shot at him.
In which case, this dude is a legend. Like,
he's an Apex legend.
He's an Apex legend. Jesus Christ. It must have been. It must have ricocheted a couple times to not pierce it. I mean, that probably wouldn't have gone through his skull, right? Like, if it bounces off.
It looks like
the
glass floated down some.
Yeah.
I mean, this could just be the moment he finds out he's unbreakable.
That could be it.
Yeah. He's just now out there in a raincoat fighting crime. That's what that's what you should do if you're listening.
He's out there drowning in a puddle.
Stay away from water.
Yeah, I used to think I was invulnerable until I snapped my arm in half. That stopped the illusions pretty quick. Yeah. Turns out you're not immortal. The older I get, the less immortal I feel. I miss being young. When you remember when your brain wasn't developed and you just thought you'd live forever, like just inherently, like you knew you weren't, but like your brain was like, you're fine. That was a nice time. That would be the pill. If I was to create drugs, it would be the drugs that make you feel as confident as you were when you were 25 again.
Oh, that's PCP.
Oh, nice. Let's all do PCP then. Let's bring some PCP.
I'll be your drug sommelier today.
Would the gentleman like perhaps a quaff of the PCP?
If you want to feel immortal, have I got the drug for you? Caution, you will not really be immortal.
Yeah, that there's a disclaimer there. I've never tried PCP. I've heard mixed. There's mixed results with PCP. I'll stick to my LSD.
Mixed reviews, three out of five on Amazon.
Yeah. PCP is truly the Morbius of drugs. Most people hate it, but for a very select strange few, it's like their favorite thing.
Pros, I thought I was immortal. Cons, I thought I was immortal.
Yeah. I just imagine the guy that brings PCP to a party, right? Like there's
reading the vibe.
Yeah, there's certain drugs that you can't bring to a party. Cocaine is fine. Like, LSD, great. You're going to have a good time. Like, mushrooms, that's fine. Weed, totally fine all the time. Like, don't be the guy that brings heroin to a party. That'd be rough. And then meth.
Yeah, you're dictating what that party is. You're saying, this is this party now. This is a PCP party now.
Like, okay,
which I believe is a gang.
You can bring heroin to a very specific heroin party. Like, it has to be a heroin-themed get-together to bring heroin. Like... Or meth is like if you're with like some really ratchet people, like then maybe they'll bring up meth. But like PCP is a statement, you know. Like PCP is like that's a me time drug or like a
that's like when you're trying to start a fight club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I would say too. Like PCP is the kind of drug that like it kind of even if everyone's already high, they're like whoa, you know. Like let's reel it back in a little bit.
Yeah, you need a mission. You need a mission to bring out PCP.
Imagine you're going to a meth party and you accidentally bring PCP.
I sure hope you guys don't have advertisers on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Weren't we supposed to register for advertisers, John? Something like that.
Yeah, it's something I was going to have Vince do for ambassador ads. Yes, yes. So anyway...
Doesn't Cumtown have advertisers? If Cumtown has advertisers...
Purple makes a real solid mattress that you can sleep on after your PCP binge. Purple mattresses...
Can you pass out for 3 days after your week-long meth?
Flash it open and it'll hide a full-grown man during a raid.
bring back turn-of-the-century opium dens. Like, that's a party. Everybody's relaxing, there's curtains, there's like bead doors everywhere, those big, long, funny pipes. Bring back opium dens. That's a party I'd go to.
Officially, and that's your new advertiser. That's who you're targeting is advertising.
Come on down to 3645 Alameda Boulevard, San Francisco, California, to the Opium Den. We're bringing it
back. Billy Joe's Opium Den. Come on down.
Come on down and get oped.
That reminds me of the time I found out that the guy that created Pilates is a guy named Joe Pilates. That has stuck with me for years.
I always thought that meant something, too.
Hey, welcome. Come on down to Joe Pilates Pilates Shack. We got 2-for-1 Pilates Wednesdays.
So, on a more serious note, we were talking about Sean Baby earlier, which I think is, I think he is Ted and I both like an inspiration in our writing, along with you, Robert. But it seems like you and Sean Baby with 1-900-HOT-DOG, you managed the impossible. You are early internet funny people that didn't fall off or become withered husks filled with resentment.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't pull a Maddox. Like, it seems like everyone pulled a Maddox at some point, except
for
Robert Brockway.
It really does. There are not a lot of contemporaries.
No, yeah, there's Robert Brockway and Sean Baby. And I guess Jason, Pargan, David Wong.
Pargan. Yeah, he's great. There are a handful of us that are still not evil with old age. I guess that's what's supposed to happen. Listen, I'm cranky. I get it. Like, putting things on my body do not work anymore. But never really been tempted to turn to evil. I mean, more so than usual, I guess.
Which one's Maddox? Maddox is he's not the something awful guy, is he?
No, that was Lotax, and he killed himself like 2 months ago. He did also turn to evil. Actually, something awful. I still use something awful. I have since 2008. I've gone through all the shifts and tides and things breaking and terrible shit, and I still always end up back there for things. And that's actually where I found Carrier Wave, your fantastic, giant, sprawling, like, post-apocalyptic novel about a virus of sorts. I fucking love Carrier Wave. I've tweeted about it. I've written Goodreads reviews. But I was on Something Awful reading the General Horror book thread, where I find my books. And the book of the month for the entire books subforum was Carrier Wave. And I was like, oh, sick. And it's got, like, a good deal on Kindle, so I picked it up. And I was just blown away by it. I had not previously read any of your stuff. And I was like, but I know who that is, so that's probably going to be pretty good. It is one of the scariest and longest books I've ever read.
Yeah, it is very long. It took me a long time. It's, you know, formatting tricks to get the physical copy down, but I think somewhere between 800 and 1,000 pages, which takes a very long time to write. I don't know if you guys know that.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you guys know how long that takes to write.
I figured that,
but it's
a long
fucking time. It was like 4 years.
I was gonna say it's probably about 4 or 5 years. Yeah,
it was really, really fucking good. Everybody out there listening, if you haven't, go to Kindle, go to Amazon, go to wherever you buy books and get you a copy of Carrier Wave. You will not be disappointed. It is, I think in my Goodreads review, I called it literally everything. You've got comedy, you've got action, you've got horror, you've got a little bit of romance. You got, it's everything.
Well, and you got so much space with like 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
You can do a little of everything. But that's kind of what my philosophy was for doing it in that very, I guess it's a very peculiar format. I did not think that until I had finished it and we were shopping it around, my agent and I, and all of the feedback that we got back from traditional publishing was, this is great. We love this. This is not a novel. It's not a book. It's not an anthology. We don't know what to do with this. Thank you for your service.
It feels format-wise kind of like World War Z. It seems like,
yeah, I didn't think it was that unconventional.
Yeah, it was kind of like an oral history kind of thing with all the different characters and different settings, times, and everything else. It's like a series of stories all centered around this big, raging, like, pandemic thing.
Yeah, I wrote it pre-pandemic, so it wasn't supposed to be about the pandemic. And I wrote it just about start of the Trump year, so it's only sort of tangentially tied into that. It's not necessarily about that, but you can definitely see my general mindset deteriorate as you go through the book, as we went through all of this. And it's very much it's kind of a blend between things like World War Z and like just general shared universe anthologies like George R. R. Martin's Wild Cards, where you iterate on a subject. It's not necessarily an entire like cohesive narrative start to finish, except for mine does turn into that, is I had the idea that I would start with this collection of shorts that sort of detail the end of the world to this sound, which is how we first encounter the signal, that just sort of transforms you into a reflection of some of your worst traits. So it's not quite a zombie book. It's not quite a monster book. It's sort of a philosophical, metaphysical, cosmic horror type of thing. And so I wanted to start as like, as a shared universe anthology, where it's not necessarily tied to one coherent narrative and it just sort of advances chronologically. But then you find your cast that was inspired by the movie Alien, which somebody pointed out to me that Alien's such a good movie because you don't know that Sigourney Weaver, that Ripley is your hero at the start. You have no idea who's the hero. It's this ensemble piece. And halfway through the movie, she just kind of takes it. And it's like, oh shit, like this is who is left. This is who I'm rooting for. And so I wanted to do that and kind of pick out the story and pick out the characters. And so a lot of people die that you think might be central, but then somebody that you might think is, if not backgrounded, then skipped over, kind of comes to the forefront and they take the story and run with it. And so by the end, it is more of a conventional narrative told through these anthologies. But again, I had 1,000 pages to do that. So there was
There's a lot of time to establish characters in 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
That's one of the neatest things about the novel is that in the beginning, you're reading these short, interconnected stories. You know, they're all, like you said, circled around the end of the world. And some of them are very short, and it's over within, 15, 20 pages around there. I don't know. Kindle's weird. Like, if you read on a Kindle, it's like you're on page 1 of 8,051, and it's like, I don't know what that means.
Especially if you're reading Carrier Wave, it's like 10,000.
Yeah, so you have these little stories, like the kid that's in the town by himself with his parents all fuckled.
Yeah.
And that kid, that story is not very long, but like 500 pages later, there's this fucking kid again, and you're like, oh man, I remember that. Like, there was a few times where I was like, okay, I should know this character. Let me go back. Did I miss something? I'm like, yeah, it's that one. Okay. Because you tie it in so subtly and so well that it just feels natural that they're there, even though they're very removed from the stories in which they initially appeared. Like, it just makes sense.
Yeah, and they
might
show up as, background characters or cameos to just push their plot along a little bit, or at least establish them in a story that kind of glazes over it. And then you might not have realized that they were here all along, and then they kind of surge to the forefront a little bit more as things heat up. And I'm pretty happy with it. I think I pulled that off pretty well. It was a really rough trick and took a lot of time.
At some point, I promise you, Robert Brockway, I will read your other books.
They're just as weird, nowhere near as long. Yeah. I went from writing the Vicious Circuit series, which is the Unnoticeables, the Empty Ones, and Kill All Angels, and I think each of those books are 300 pages. So if you put them all together, you equal Carrier Wave.
That's the thing about Carrier Wave. It doesn't feel 1,000 pages. It moves along at such a brisk clip. Like, I would waste 6 to 7 hours just reading huge chunks of that book. Because I'm a huge reader. I love reading. Ladies. No. At the time I met my wife, she was like, oh, you're so impressed. I'm like, yeah, I read a 1,000-page book. And then we got married the next day.
That's when she knew.
What, Ted?
I said that's when she knew that you were one of those where that it's in for commitment.
Yeah.
Like, you're willing to go all the way if you're willing to read a 1,000-page book.
You should see the girth of his books.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you read the unabridged edition of It? Oh. Fuck me right now.
That's I got like hot. 400 pages into It, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I get it.
Did you get to the sewer orgy? Because you didn't get it.
That's the worst part of the book.
The thing that's weird about the book is that it pops back and forth between the two time periods, unlike the miniseries. So I'd already seen the movie. I'd already seen both versions of the movie when I started reading the book, and I was like, you know what? I've been here. I know what this is about. I mean, obviously I didn't get to the part where they have the underage gangbang or the giant turtle explanation, but...
In a sewer.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, whatever.
I feel like you can't really know what a book's about if you don't know about the sewer gangbang scene. I feel like that's... Yeah. I'm not endorsing it, I'm just saying that's very telling.
I think it's very telling that the most popular... Like, one of the most popular horror franchises that we have right now, which I wouldn't say franchises... It's an iconic horror thing, is It. And, like, it's very, very popular. And also, no one would write that nowadays, right? No. Like, it's crazy.
And it's the same thing with, like, in part, Carry a Wave is based off of another Stephen King epic. The
Based
Stand
off of a teenage gangbang.
Yeah, and in part, there's a teenage gangbang in the background. I mean, it's really subtle. You might miss it. But yeah, in every book I write. No, it was influenced by post-apocalyptic epics like Swan Song, like Robert McCammon's Swan Song, and of course Stephen King's The Stand, which I kind of felt like you weren't allowed to do this anymore. Just take this huge chunk of time and explore, like, just wring it out, explore everything you possibly can out of it, and come up with what seems like it's reserved for fantasy nowadays, where you have to invent this whole other world. Just write this tome. And like, that's something I was definitely inspired by Stephen King and like It and The Stand, to just go nuts and really exhaust something. But yeah, I didn't wind up with any teenage sewer gangbangs, and luckily.
Well, it's an interesting thing. It's like, you know, the idea that these epics can't really exist anymore. I mean, like, in a way it's true, but everything is pointing us towards kind of more kind of event series kind of things, smaller, kind of more condensed products. It's whatever things pushing from, you know, TikTok to YouTube with their shorts to even, you know, literature and stuff like that. But like, it's this constant fluctuation between companies being like, oh, no, we need to push shorter form content, versus like, oh, no, these all of a sudden longer form content's getting really popular. Like, you know, the most popular style of video on YouTube right now is like 3-hour long video essays, and TikTok was like, oh, let's introduce 10-minute videos, but you know, then people are going to get tired of those and want to go back to 30-second videos. And it's always like, it's to me, it's always the businesses that are the ones that are lagging behind. They're the ones that like are, it's always like there's some kind of new disruptive force that will kind of shake
trends,
it up.
You'll never catch them. There'll always be the next thing by the time you get there.
Yeah And I think that anyone that kind of goes into literature or media expecting it to be static is like, there's certain trends that you can plot, but you know, you have to be able to either adapt or understand that like whatever you are creating in a present moment, you know, might not be what the zeitgeist of the corporate sphere wants, but it might be what, just because that's not where the current lens of the corporate sphere is, doesn't mean that audience doesn't still exist. You know, like, we're still alive. We're still like here to like read the shit that we used to read. Like, we didn't change. It's just that, you know, the current push is for something different, and it'll eventually kind of circle back, and then maybe you'll be a billionaire.
Yeah, that's sort of been our philosophy.
It's kind of everything old is new again. You know, whenever my dad was a child, my dad's old as hell, he would go to the Melba Theater and watch 10-minute long serials, and I feel like we're moving back to serialized content. Even Kindle, which I love my Kindle. I love it. I read so much, you guys. You guys, did I tell you that I read a lot?
Yeah, I read a lot.
Kindle, yeah, we get it.
Kindle has Vella now, which is their cute way of saying novella, but it's serialized content. You can borrow a Kindle Vella book, and it's like 20 pages, and then the next, they're written rapid fire, so there's like 50 in a series. And they have the dumbest thing where it's like, okay, once you read 4 for free, you can use Vella coins to buy the next installment of this book. And it's like,
ooh, I was on board until now.
Yeah, it's like, get fucked, Kindle. Like, I don't mind.
Oh, that's a shame. I was so on board.
Yeah,
it's
like,
hey, that's great.
Yeah, I like microfiction where you can go through and it's like serialized. Here's 20 pages and it ends on a cliffhanger. And you're like, oh, shit, let me grab this next one. And it's like reading at your pace, and then it's like, oh, but you can buy Vella coins to get the next installment. Don't nickel and dime my
mechanics,
yeah,
my novel
fucking reading, like monetization, microtransaction, my reading.
Put some tokens in and hope you get the next chapter. If
yeah,
not, you get a chapter from like somebody's romance. You're like, damn it, next time.
Break Carrier Wave up into like. Break Carrier Wave up into like 400 Kindle Vellas and make people roll for better endings.
You just made me $1 billion. I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna turn. This is it. This is my shift to evil.
This is it. So outside, like Maddox is standing outside your house, shaking a chain, going, "Do it, do it, do it,
do it."
So he does it every day, and today is the day I go outside and skip around with him.
He's like, "I wrote a book."
Well, okay, so like, this is interesting though, because I don't think it's even that big of a stretch to be like, this is. like serialized content mixed with corporatization is like obviously what people would think of, but it's also like antithetical to like what it's all about. Because like if you think about those kind of serialized series that like we all love, well, I loved as kids, like something like, you know, creepypasta style, like Ted the Caver, like the SCP series or something like that. Like it exists because you can go, ooh, that was a cool little thing that I did for 15 minutes, and then you move on, right? But like, yeah, if there was like a paywall every time you wanted to read a new article, you'd lose interest super fast.
Oh yeah, it's just monetization rarely understands what's good about content. It's so hard to find that. And of course, we all have to live. You have to find that. I'm not here telling everybody to burn down the system. Burn down the system. But but you have to find the balance of like what is a thing people would like to pay for. Like we started 1-900 Hot Dog on Patreon, and we put in, just on friends' advice, we put in like higher tiers that we were like, I don't want anybody to pay this. Who wants to pay this? And they're some of our most popular tiers because people just want to support us. And the very few benefits that you get from that we really didn't understand, they love it. They insist on it. There are people that will contribute and pay like 2-3 times more than the highest tier we have ever asked for. And we're like, we can message them and be like, hey, stop doing that. And they will not. So there are people want to pay for things, but people don't like it when you make them have to pay for things. It's just,
I mean, I think that it's like a balancing act too, right? Because I think there's like, okay, so I make video game. And when I say I would like $10 for my video game, please, people don't like bat an eye. You know, it's like sometimes they might be like, oh, that's too, like, I would want to pay less for this or whatever. But it's like, but that's the thing, is like, it's the way that we contextualize different content, right? Like if you're like, ah, this is like the exclusive VIP website that you can't read, like, does anyone still read the Washington Post? Like anyone?
No, I used to read it all the time. I haven't gone to anything that's been fully locked down, which is sort of hypocritical of me being a person that runs a website where some content is locked down.
Well, it's just one of those things where it's like, there's a big difference between some content being locked down or something like the Washington Post does, which is like, you can't read anything unless you're subscribed.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I understand the need for them to make money with their subscription model, but I also understand that like the problem is, like you said, the advertiser model just doesn't fucking work anymore. And a lot of
nobody knows what's next. I mean, we started making, we make about half of our content on 1-900 Hot Dog free, because from the very basic standpoint, we would like other people to read it, and maybe you will enjoy it and stick around. And if you want to give us money for the rest of it, that's great. You need something, like, otherwise, well, how are you appealing to anybody? And nobody at the Washington Post came forward and put forward that idea. It was like, hey, maybe we do a bunch of stuff still for free and we just make like certain premium things. Nope. Nobody ever had that idea. Like the people in charge of making money are not talking to the people in charge of making content.
You know what? I would be willing to bet that they did have that idea, but the answer was, well, if we're charging for some things, why don't we charge for all of the things? Like, why would we have content we're not making money off of? Which is, it's kind of shitty, because I can understand that argument, because yeah, like in my business, I am also the guy in charge of like making sure that we make money so that like everyone can like pay their bills, you know, which is the worst part of running a business.
We're all unhappy with capitalism, but must participate.
Yeah, we all must. We gotta do something. What am I gonna eat? You know. So,
dreams.
I'm gonna say, eat my ambition.
But, eat your ambition, homie. Fuck
eat
it
your
up.
Ambition. So I guess it's just over.
It's a good T-shirt. Sell that on a T-shirt.
Oh, there we go. There's another one to put next to "It's your truck farted up" on the.
It's your truck farted up.
Eat your ambition. I have to remember to go to our merch lady about that and be like, I need an "Eat your ambition" T-shirt.
What the fuck does that mean? I don't know. It's like a Rage Against the Machine song?
Yeah, Eat Your Ambition. It's my favorite Rage Against the Machine song.
Yeah.
I like 1-900 Hot Dog's model, because I can go and read stuff with the little hot dog next to it, and I don't have to pay money for it. But if I want, like, say Sean Baby writes something about MMA, which is like my favorite type of writing, I will go give you money for that.
Hmm. Because... yeah, that's the central idea, is we put a lot of stuff out there for free, and kind of the idea, we sort of wish more people used it, because it seems to be a very binary thing right now with people. I either read our site and pay for everything, or don't even read the free stuff. So we really wanted to make the free stuff like, here's what we're doing. This is always going to be here. In fact, at the end of the year, we make a bunch more stuff free, and a lot of the premium stuff we do, like we do team working days where we work together to tackle like a topic in a super long, really detailed length. And at the end of the every year, we make a bunch of them free, and they stay that way so that, you know, you don't have to pay for it, but you can. If like the urge strikes you, and weirdly most people do. So I think I invented a new revenue type. I think I did.
What's your new revenue type?
Just giving shit away for free and hoping people will give you stuff back.
Yeah.
Oh wait, that's like begging. No.
That's like begging, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't invent that.
So you're just a street performer then.
Yeah, I'm a hobo.
So
internet hobo.
Have you ever said the phrase, that might be your way, but it's not the Brock way?
Several times. It's been the cause of all of my previous divorces.
I can imagine just like someone being like, the moment you say that, they're like, nope. And then they pack their bags and just immediately leave.
Brock way or the highway, baby?
To all of our 40 plus listeners.
You're like standing there with like tears in your eyes. And they're like, you're like, she's like, can't you just, and you're like, I can't stop the Brock way. It's the Brock way all day. And she just walks off and you're both crying, but you know, it's like, this is just what has to happen. Like the love was there for a long time, but you know, she realizes that you like, you know, there might be something within you that wants to change, but even deeper is the part of you that can't.
It's beautiful.
And the part of you that wants to change is not stronger than the part of you that loves the fact that you won't change. And that love is saying, love for her. And she knows that it hurts.
My last name.
And I know it sucks in the moment, but you know, in like 10 years, you'll both look back and realize it was for the best. You'll be a bit melancholic, but yeah.
See, Ted made this beautiful thing happen, and I was just going to scream out the lyrics of the Limp Bizkit song, but change it to My Way or the Brock Way.
My way or the Brock Way.
Yeah,
mine, equally valid art.
Yeah, mine is very simple. But for our 40 plus listeners out there, I know you're out there. I've seen the statistics. You're listening to the podcast, and we love you. But on 1-900 Hot Dog, there's a section. There's fucking day and there's punching day. And if you're not paying money for that content, what are you even doing with your life?
Yeah, that's a good point. I need to get on this Patreon shit.
Yeah, it's time.
Hey, what are you even doing with your life?
Diversify, Ted. Move,
I know, right?
Move some of the money out of OnlyFans and into 1-900 Hot Dog.
Speaking of porn on Patreon, can other people see what you subscribe to? I've always been curious about that.
Before I sign up for your Patreon, can you see what I'm doing? The dirty,
can
freaky, nasty things
I'm doing?
Can
you see that I'm a dirty
anime
pervert? Is this possible?
I think you can see, like, your friends, maybe? If there's, like, a friend system? I don't really know.
Like,
if there's a brown paper bag for the internet, I would have enabled that option, believe me.
Like, if Ted signs up for 1-900 Hot Dog, will people see Ted, patron of 1-900 Hot Dog, plus a bunch of just real freaky, dirty shit? Like, I think that's his
concern.
A bunch
of freaky anime pervert shit.
Possibly, yes.
Well, I guess those are the dice you roll, you know?
Like, Ted, are you really giving $250 a month to this person who creates custom Monster Musume, like, Hololive avatars?
Yeah, that sounds like a deal.
Yeah, I just realized I'm like already have like $50 a month I'm doing on Patreon. It's not that bad.
It's all to my Patreon. I just, I call Ted on Discord, and I'm like, hey, man, you're killing it today. And then Patreon.
And then subscribe to my Patreon for more. That one was free, but there are more.
There's so many. I just say aspirational shit on a Patreon. I just send it to all my Patreon patrons.
Now, Robert, if I sign up for a year, can you promise that you'll still be around?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
This year. You have to ask that question every year.
So we have to have you back on the podcast April of next year and be like, what's the next year looking like? Fiscally for this Patreon.
Like, I don't know. I gotta go get a job as a garbage man or something. They got great pay and good benefits, and I don't really have a very good sense of smell. It seems like it's just kind of meant to be.
Why is it asking for my shipping address? What do you do? What do you ship your patrons?
It depends on what tier you pledge. What we do, we ship t-shirts, and I have been collecting obscure and sometimes deeply problematic 80s and 90s trading cards and trying to construct ad hoc games with the community, forcing them to play bizarre trading card games using decks from the Iraq War and like All My Children and stuff. Just all sorts of terrible things. Sean has his vast cursed library that he reads from, and if you subscribe at the higher tiers, twice a year we just send you elements from that, and then the curse is yours to deal with.
Oh, that sounds fun. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, mail carriers hate us.
Yeah, I imagine.
Put that on the website, 1-900-HOT-DOG. Mail carriers hate us. In, like, Comic Sans, like, kind of tilted a little bit warped. Mail carriers hate us.
I mean, the problem is if you start listing the people that hate you, our list is just, it's way too long to fit on a graphic.
Our managing editor, once again, Sam, he likes to brag that he is on Andrew Breitbart's Enemies of America list. But I'm pretty sure if you've written for any amount of time in the last 10 years, you are on that list.
I wonder if I gotta go check and see if I'm on that
list. Yeah, you have to.
I would love to be on that list. I bet I could just slip him a quick fuck you and he would.
I think he's, I think he's dead now. You can go find his family. Some sort of
summoning circle and contact him in hell. And
go find the executor of his estate and be like, yes, I would like to contribute one get fucked to Andrew Breitbart's corpse, his stupid, ugly corpse. Could you just deliver that for me? Just one fuck off.
And is there like a stipulation in his will that puts me on his hated persons list?
Also, I need a spot on the Enemies of America list, and also he can gargle piss. So if you could just write that down, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
Can you gargle piss for me, please?
So, okay, great, thanks. We are coming up, unfortunately, on the end of our hour, and that sucks. But at the same time, Ted, where can we find you on the internet at large?
I work at Dread XP. So no, I'm at Dread Henschke is my Twitter handle. But just follow the main Twitter account at Dread XP _.
And Robert, where can we find you on the internet at large?
Ooh, there's a bunch of stuff. On Twitter, Brockway_LLC. The book, of course, is Carrier Wave, or I also have the Vicious Circuit series, The Unnoticeables, The Empty Ones, and Kill All Angels. I have my own Patreon for fiction, short fiction, and screenplays and things that I write. I'm currently posting a book as I go, and that's Brock War, just my last name, except for an R instead of a Y. Brock War! And we do a podcast for 1-900-HOT-DOG, of course, and that's the Dog Zone 9000 with me and Sean Baby and all sorts of great guests. It's lots of fun. And then, of course, 1-900-HOT-DOG.com. It's not a phone number.
Mail carriers hate us.
Enemies of America.
We have to have Sean on now. I feel like that's law. Sure. Like, we have Robert on. I don't want Sean to feel left out. He's like, oh, you guys talked about Andrew Breitbart gurgling piss and I wasn't there.
Yeah, he already does. I've been like dunking on him all day. Just how this whole hour has been in his face.
He's like, yeah. Sorry that you guys didn't message, sign on for that. Message Sean and it's like, hey man, I got to go on the podcast hosted by a company I'd never heard of before.
Had you never heard of us? I thought you followed us on Twitter. I thought that's how we found you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's the joke. Yeah, we're.
Well, how did you find out about us? I'm curious.
Just like Shutter stuff.
Oh, okay, cool.
Very closely associated.
Yeah,
I follow glad. Algorithms, man.
That's
sometimes
fair.
Sometimes the robot tells me what to do when the robot is right.
We do often post about stuff since the parent company is a movie company to our game company.
Yeah, I'm a fan of games. I'm a fan of Shutter and. The algorithm pointed out, like, hey, what about these guys? And I was like, yeah, what about those guys?
Have you played our Bad Ben game yet?
I have not. I haven't had any chance to play basically any games except for lately I've been playing Elden Ring and it has been ruining me physically.
So have you ever heard of the film series known as Bad Ben?
No. Okay. Is that the one with the bear?
No. No. The one with the bear, are you... Are you thinking maybe like a kid movie?
Are you thinking a Gentle Ben?
No, I thought there was like a bad version. It's like a bad boy version of Gentle Ben, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like no, a leather jacket. And
I don't know what Gentle Ben is.
Children.
What's a Gentle Ben?
It's a movie about
a bear. It's a very nice bear.
Yeah.
Oh. And then there's Bad Ben, which is, you know,
his evil for counterpart. The adults.
Yeah.
Bad Gentle Ben for the kids and Bad Ben for mom and dad.
Yeah. Well, Bad Ben is a film series. It's a found footage movie series created by a man that lives in New Jersey. You can tell because he talks like this. He's great. I love him.
Oh, I'm already in love.
And he makes these movies for like $300. The true story is that like he had written a script and he was going to have actors come and do it. And he had it all set up. And then they just didn't show up. So he's like, all right, I guess I'll shoot it myself. So it's just this old guy who like doesn't really act, just kind of making these movies, these like stupid found footage haunted movies in his own house for $300 each. He's made 9 of them so far in 3 years, like 4 years or something, like 9 of them. And like he's just having a good time and it's super fun. And so we like watching them because like they are very, very, very low budget, but there's something incredibly charming about them. Like when you go watch all 9 of them in a row, don't stop. You'll see what I mean. You'll be like, wow, this is deeply charming.
You'll want to quit around 8, but you got to stick it out because that's when you fall in love.
Well, you'll want to quit with number 5, but you got to stick through because 6 really picks it back up again. And then 7 knocks it out of the park. And 8 is a delight.
Are these full length? These are like 2-hour movies.
These are like 90 minute movies. Yeah.
Wow. 80, 90. Just 3 of them a year.
Yeah. It's crazy. See, the first one is like a straight horror movie. The second one is he also tries to make it as a straight horror movie. The third one is where he kind of like leans into the comedy a lot more. And it's genius. He's really funny. And he has a great sense of like slapstick physical humor. Like half the jokes are him falling downstairs. And it's him doing it. Like he will fall downstairs for his movie.
Well, I am not above a man falling down some stairs. The funniest thing that I have ever laughed at until I just about passed out was an old man falling on an escalator, and then it just kept going and kept falling on that escalator for like a good 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I like that a lot too. That's fun.
He just falls forever. He's still falling to this day.
He's still going to this day. That's how they power the mall. They have an old guy falling downstairs in his motion.
It's just a jumbly skeleton at this point, just clacking up and down the escalator. Yeah.
The dark version of the mall slips into another universe where old people are trapped forever, so that in our version of the universe, escalators work.
What's that poem, Those Who Walk Away From Whatever? You know what I'm talking about? It's like a city where like everything's perfect, except that there's one kid that gets tortured all the time.
Those Who Walk Away From Omelas?
Yeah. But it's with a guy falling down an escalator and everyone's like, should we help him? And they're like, no, that's how we get our nice things.
Sometimes, Ted, you say stuff and I'm like, ooh, Ted's English literature degree is showing. Oh, he's just flopping it out there.
I loved it. That was a great reference. It's perfect.
Actually, there's been times where we had an argument on Twitter, which is a very common thing, arguments on Twitter. But the dude started talking about like James Joyce and shit. And I'm like, Ted, this is your job. Like, you now get into this argument. Yeah, tag team. Take all
I'm
your Shakespearean, take all your Shakespearean
trying to like
knowledge.
Fucking bring up Finnegan's Wake when Jans was talking about Elden Ring. Jans was like, Elden Ring's too hard, they should have an easy mode. And he was like, Finnegan's Wake was written to be deliberately obtuse. And if you do not understand,
yeah, and that's like, why it sucks.
Yeah, this guy, this dude just sucks. Like, the guy, I will always dunk on this guy because his point was that, Death of the Author. Like, games are perfect as they are, but also that Miyazaki like made it perfectly. Like, he just didn't know his own argument. Like, he was you know, when there's a kid who like just graduated college and like just defended their thesis and is like still high on like, haha, no, like
fight everybody about this.
Yeah. But you're like, hey, like you've been in an academic bubble for a while. You have to go out in the real world and experience like real world application of your theories, and like it breaks down in application. And like a lot of those literary theories, like when you actually like start being a writer, you're like, oh, people were just jacking off in each other's mouths. Yeah. I get it.
And you, of course, were trained to do that in any sort of creative writing and or English department. So you are an expert at jacking off in your fellow's mouths. And that skill comes in really useful in the real world.
Yeah, I destroyed Twitter for a solid 8 hours by being... I didn't say Elden Ring was too hard. I said that it lacked some basic accessibility options that most games have or should have. Like, I've been on this accessibility thing since we spoke with Tara Velker, the head of accessibility for Xbox Studios, on the podcast a few months ago. And she's a very insightful lady. She's very nice. But she made us realize, like, just how much goes into making a game accessible. So with something like Elden Ring, for someone that's hard at hearing, vision problems, things like that, it's not super accessible to them. And this attitude around Elden Ring, that, like, it's hardcore for a reason. This is Miyazaki's perfect vision. If you don't hear well, it's not for you, you piece of shit. And it's like, accessibility is good until it...
Get a better body, idiot.
Yeah, accessibility is good until it starts running into these people's, like, hardcore mindset about Souls games. So I was making what I thought was a pretty solid argument, and then this guy's like, have you read Finnegan's Wake? And it's like, gargle piss, I'm out of here. Ted, just... tag him
well,
in.
Then the real galaxy brain argument was that he was saying that Finnegan's Wake is like intellectually what's the word I'm looking for, like, not discriminatory, but like there's like a barrier to entry of like intellect, just like with Elden Ring there's a barrier to entry of skill. And so it's like, it's not a game for the unskilled, just like Elden Ring, like Finnegan's Wake is not a book for the uncultured. I was like, okay, this guy needs to gargle piss. Like, this is like the worst fucking argument.
I'm like, not sure I can back this up in any way, but I'm just going to call it, that guy's like hard into eugenics.
Probably. I mean, he was a medieval studies major, so.
Just a gut feeling, you're a eugenics guy.
We had to kick a Nazi from our server for being like into Steven Universe from the lens of Nazism.
Okay, I'm intrigued though.
Yeah, so like this guy pops into our server and his avatar is some fucking Steven Universe character with like a Waffen SS hat, and we're like, oh, and he's like, hi, my name is something something. My name is
Adolf Universe.
Well, his name was like some Uber Mensch or
something.
It
was Feldmarshal Polycrus. And I was like, wait a second. I was like, that is a Nazi ass military title.
But then he introduced himself and was like, don't ask about the title. Ha ha. It's not Nazi. It is just a reference to German army. Ha ha. Like, he said it in his intro speech.
Anytime they have to specify it, this isn't Nazi stuff. It's Nazi stuff.
Yeah, they were like, please don't, there's no need to Google my name. It is a perfectly normal name. You see nothing.
It was really like someone that's like 12 trying to be sly, and they're just not, because they're like 12 and don't have the capacity to be sly. And yeah, and then we were like, hey, so like, what's with the Nazi shit? And he was like, oh.
You asked, I said not to ask.
He said, it's not Nazi, I just really like the fashion or something. I'm just really into... We're like, okay, so he's like a wearaboo, you know, like, that exists. But then he was like, oh, yeah, I just feel like the fascists in Steven Universe really had a good idea, and that they were too fast to, like, get rid of those characters because they should have, you know, fleshed out more. Why is it so bad to just want everything to be perfect?
Yeah,
I was
they
like,
were,
all right, this guy's a Nazi.
They were really upset that in some episode or some arc of Steven Universe, Steven said that it was okay to be unique. And that does not fit with what we think here. He was very upset about it. Like, about the kids show saying, it's okay to be yourself, which is what every kids show in the history of time has done. And he looked at that, and in his brain, something started turning, cedar started burning, and he was like, actually, the Nazis were right.
I've never said that out loud before, but this is what pushes me over.
Steven Universe. The
radicalizing children.
The stressorism to Steven Universe pipeline. Okay. We've gone entirely too far over. This is a very fun conversation, but people stop listening after an hour. They tell me, they're like, I don't care after an hour. So
those are not nice people.
On the internet, I know that we got Brockway and we got Ted, but you can find me at DreadXP _ on Twitter, at DreadXP Games on TikTok, at DreadXP Games on Instagram, DreadXP on Facebook, DreadXXXP on OnlyFans and Grindr. I think that's about everywhere. We are putting out a new collection. We announced yesterday, May 3rd, you can play DreadX Collection 5. 12 new terrifying games from 12 devious devs. It is going to be the scariest thing you've ever played. We focused on pure horror this time, and you are going to shit in and around your pants. It's very good. And that goes on sale May 3rd. Be there.
shit all your pants. You'll have to change out just to shit your pants again.
You will go to your room, open your dresser drawer where you keep the pants, and shit on them. That's how scary it is.
I totally forgot. I was in the middle of telling a story about Bad Ben.
Oh shit.
We're done, but I can finish the story if you want me to finish what I was talking about, Robert.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, so we were watching all these movies and I was like just really stoned. And I was like, these are hilarious. We should get the rights to like make the game. Cause why not? Like, you know, that's what I do. So I just messaged the guy and the creator. I was like, can we have the official rights to make your game? And he was like, all right. So I like signed a contract and everything.
Yeah, sure.
And we made a game on itch and we put it out there and it got played by like a lot of people. It was like Markiplier played it and it was like really popular and it's like, you know, it did really, really well. But it was just like, you know, that's kind of how I like to run the company is that, you know, why not, you know?
Yeah, you think he saw a boost from that? I hope so.
Say again?
Do you think he saw a boost from that? I hope so.
Yeah, like, he did. He's told me several times that it was, it did more for his franchise than any of the films did.
Oh, that's great.
So that's pretty cool. Here, I'll link it to you so you can go play it. There'll be a quiz next time on Bad Ben. There's a dedicated button just for swearing, so enjoy that.
And for the third appearance of managing editor Sam, for some reason, the button is named after him. It's the situational awareness mechanic, or Sam.
Yeah, I would like to remind you, I was incredibly high while we were making this. So it was a lot of decisions got made based on giggles.
Yes.
Just and, like with Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah. This is my Finnegan's Wake.
Oh.
Except.
Oh, go ahead, Ted.
It's Finnegan's Wake Me Up Inside.
Oh my God. One more thing for self-promotion. Dread XP will be at PAX April 20th through the 25th. We have a booth. We're showing off new games. We have Spookware multiplayer. We have your favorite, Sucker for Love, about dating anime Cthulhu girl. We have the Mortuary Assistant. We have all these sick games that you can come to our booth and play and meet all of us. We're all going to be there for some reason because we're good at what we do. We're all going to be at PAX in Boston. Come see us. Robert Brockway, play us out.
Womp, 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 womp.